Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing? I mean, nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grief process. You know, with roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, that's about a third of the population. That means that everyone probably knows someone caring for a loved one. Join Dave and his guests now and every Wednesday at noon Pacific time as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. So find a comfortable place to relax, kick up your feet, and prepare to feel better and to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to get you through today and every day so you can survive your tomorrows. But not just survive, but to live life fully and abundantly. Yes, you heard me right. That is a possible goal to achieve. And now, here's your host, Dave Nassani. Hey, from Los Angeles, the Big LA, welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I'm Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, YouTube, and a whole bunch of other platforms. And our goal here is to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. And we have an exciting show planned for you today. I am so excited with my lovely co-host, Adrian Gruberg from the Caregiver Space. Say hello, Adrian.
Hello.
We'll be interviewing singer, songwriter, Dove recipient, and Grammy nominee Gary Chapman. You will not want to miss this show. I am Dave Nassani, your host, and this show is to caregivers of every single kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring and selfless and sacrificial, and they have this tiny little problem. They're very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. We can learn something from the airlines, and I always like to say, including United, who rips people off the plane, because they tell us in the event of an emergency, put your oxygen mask on first before you attempt to help your loved one with their mask. Why do they do that? I mean, isn't that the most selfish thing you ever heard? Because they know from experience that if you don't put your needs first, you're not going to be able to take care of anybody. And they've learned from experience that people black out who don't put their oxygen mask on first. Well, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects it can have on us. Anytime we suffer a loss, we go through a grief process. And when we know we're going through it, it makes it a whole lot easier. I mean, it could take days, weeks, months, or even years to get through it. Some people never get over it. But we want to help you get through it as quickly as possible. Unfortunately, there is only one way to get out of the grief process. You got to go through it. There's no shortcuts. Can't go around it, over it, under it. And I'm sure everyone who's been through it can attest to that. Hey, I want to take this time to thank last week's guest author, Susan Hodges. And just a reminder, you can listen to that interview and all our interviews right here on our website, caregiverscaregiver.com, including the one we're doing today. And I am so excited that my new book is finally out, and we have already hit the number one spot on three categories on Amazon. And my book signing with Barnes & Noble is scheduled for Veterans Day, November 11th. So we're going to be tying in caregiver veterans and National Family Caregiver Month, and everything is just going smooth as butter. And it's called It's My Life Too. Reclaim your caregiver sanity by learning when to say yes and when to say no. All right, enough of that. Hey, a big welcome to our guest, Gary Chapman. Gary, are you still with us?
I am here. Thank you so much.
Good. I love it when the guest is there when I call for him. It just takes a load because you just never know with technology and the airwaves, because we know who controls the airwaves, don't we?
Indeed.
Well, Gary, I'm so thankful that you agreed to come on our show. Normally, I would give my guest an opportunity to introduce themselves. However, you have so many accolades, and I don't want you to leave not one of them out, because I know you're such a humble guy. So I'm going to introduce you, if that's okay.
Sure, go for it.
So here we have Gary Chapman. And for those of you who don't know who he is, he's long been one of the most respected singer-songwriters in Nashville. For nearly four decades, Chapman has seamlessly blurred the musical lines of contemporary Christian, pop, country, and Southern gospel, racking up an impressive list of awards, including 7 Dove Awards, 5 Grammy nominations, and writing credits for legendary artists such as Kenny Rogers, Alabama, and Queen Winona Judd. Chapman's also widely remembered as the host of TNN's popular primetime country television series and the Sam's Place concert series and radio show at the Ryman Auditorium. So he's qualified to be on this side of the microphone as well. Gary and his wife, Cassie, adopted a baby daughter, Eva Rose, in 2013 and remain very close to his son, Matt, and daughters, Sarah and Millie, who have since spread their wings for school and successful careers, respectively. Family is everything to him. Once a week, Chapman sings live from his living room and tells the stories behind a different classic hymn. These timeless songs were the only thing that gave me, that gave my father peace in his final days when he was struggling. Yeah. I would just take out my guitar and play the songs that I had learned as a child for him at his bedside. Singing those hymns I grew up with helped me remember what music is really for. Excuse me. After a long struggle with Parkinson's and cancer, Gary's father went to be with the Lord in peace, like a preacher should. Easter morning at sunrise, a hymn a week has grown into a global loving community. At facebook.com/a hymn a week. I think I said that right. So welcome, Gary Chapman. Did I leave anything out?
Thank you. No, you've said everything. I've not done one other thing in 40 years. That's it.
Yeah, I love the way people from Nashville all sound alike. They're just a good old boy. And, you know, I called you the other day, spoke to you for the first time, and you made me feel like we were friends for years. And I just want to thank you because that just means you're a nice guy. And there ain't too many nice guys out there. So let's get started. Gary, tell me your experience with being a caregiver.
You know, for me, it was not a choice. That choice got made long, long, long ago. Because my mother and father were so dear to me. I couldn't imagine any other path once they were given the set of circumstances they were given, my father in particular. My mom went relatively quickly, and she actually died in an assisted living facility. When Dad started to get sick, he had watched that and just said, you know, I really don't want to do that. And I said, well, great, I don't want it either, just stay here. We had a good long-term care policy in place. After it didn't have one for Mom, because it kind of snuck up on us, and paid dearly for that, as I'm sure many of your listeners can understand.
Yeah.
I forget what the last 3 or 4 months of Mom's life cost, but it was a lot. But anyway, I had that in place. But when it's your father, I didn't really, like I said, I didn't have any choice. I just knew it was what I was supposed to do. So my wife was really instrumental there as well. And my brother and sister live in Nashville as well. I'm the youngest of three kids.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they would come by and help as well.
You talked about your family helping out, which is very fortunate. You know, a lot of
Having
siblings.
Brother and sister in Nashville.
Yeah, a lot of them aren't that helpful.
No.
There always seems to be one who you know, says, okay, I'm going to do this. And the other says, well, great, we'll pray for you. But,
and, you know, it's usually, the thing is, it's usually the sister. It's usually the female sibling. I'm curious as to why that wasn't the case in your case.
Well, you know, I moved to Nashville 40 years ago, and when I moved, I figured I would see my family at Christmas and when somebody died, you know. And one by one, they came to a little bitty town in Texas, De Leon, Texas, very small, right in the middle. And I, you know, one by one, they came to visit, and they didn't leave. So it just made more sense that mom and dad would migrate to my house. It, it, I, you know, I had done well and you know, those things come and go. But at that point in life, I was in a good position to take care of them. So when they first moved to town, I actually built them a little log house on the farm where I lived, and mm-hmm. they were there. They were probably there for 15 years or so. And then I built another house, and I put in that house a living space for them.
For them.
And while I was building that house, my mom passed away. She never got.
How old was she?
Dad did. She was 63. Very young.
Very young.
What did she die of?
You know, that's a fabulous question that I wish I had an answer to. It was some strange neuropathy, but they never really got a name put on it, honestly. They kept trying, but it was a form of dementia, but she knew everything that was happening, but she kind of locked up. She couldn't express herself.
Wow.
Couldn't really move much. And for her, that was just an absolute hell, because she was extremely gregarious. I mean, she embarrassed the fool out of me my whole life. It was very, very, very outgoing for a lot of great reasons. And if you were breathing, my mom needed to tell you about Jesus. And as a teenager, that was not always conducive to being hip. So we had our moments, but we certainly came together before it was all said and done. But when she passed away, it was one of those, you know, better that than what was kind of moments.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then my dad's process was difficult as well, but in different ways. His spirit was amazing, just amazing. While his body was just going away, he giggled until the end. He absolutely did. It was just, he lived really well. He was a really smart guy, really kind, very humble, really giving. Just he was the best guy I've met so far.
Wow. So
he lived really well, and honestly, he died better. It was just amazing, and that process just changed me. I wouldn't trade it for anything. Nothing.
What was wrong with your dad? What was it? Just age, or
he was diagnosed with Parkinson's.
And he
had that for, I guess, 8 years. And then the last 2 years of his life, he had cancer as well. And it was, it attacked the nerves in his legs. And so he lost use of his legs for about a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much, you know, the first year or two of my life, he put me to bed and changed my diaper, and I returned the favor. And it was
reversal.
It was so, it's so hard, and it's so gorgeous at the same time. You know, which is really life when it gets down to it. You know, anybody that says it's all good is lying, but there's beauty in every single day. Every single day.
The circle of life, to steal a line from life.
Yeah.
So how did this affect your family, your wife, your kids, having your dad living with you and stuff?
Well, my kids, by the time that happened, my three oldest kids, I've got kids, I have a 29-year-old son, and then daughters, 27, 24, and 4.
Ooh.
So yeah, I'm that guy.
Yeah.
And, grandkids?
No, which is really going to be funny when they have them, because you know, we're going to have kids the same age. they were all gone, but I mean, everybody was affected by Dad and his, the way that he lived and died. He you know, he was just a small town preacher his whole life, but my goodness, the amount of people that he touched. I mean, to this day, there aren't many days that go by that somebody doesn't walk up to me and say, I loved your mom and dad. Apparently, they got out more than I was aware. It was, you know, that continues. And their memory lives on.
Of course.
You know, the thing that brought him comfort in that intro, you referenced it. It's the absolute truth. You know, unlike his idiot son, he had never ingested anything that altered his consciousness. despite the fact that he had access to all the great drugs, he couldn't do it. It was just too awkward for him.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing that brought him peace and comfort was me sitting on the edge of his bed and playing and singing the songs that he taught me. And after he died, my wife said, you know, that worked, and there's more people like him. So we started doing this Him a Week thing, and it's so simple. It is so completely simple. It's just guitar, vocal, one pass. The only time I think I've ever redone one was because I felt like I was performing. I was getting in the way, because it's not about me. It's about the song and the spirit that created it in the first place. You know, a song doesn't live to be 300 or 400 years old because it's weak.
Right.
It has life in it. And those old songs are unique. I mean, I don't know how many modern worship songs will be sung 300 years from now if we were all still taking oxygen around here. But I got a suspicion that it wouldn't be as many. Those songs are truly timeless, and they all come from places of great pain and joy and struggle. You know, from the old Negro spirituals to the songs that were created when this country was formed. Out of every major struggle, you can find songs that are attached to it. And
yeah, for example, that song, "It Is Well with My Soul." What's the story that led up to those lyrics being written?
That's probably the best story, period, of any that I'm aware of. A guy named Horatio Spafford was a lawyer and an investor, and in Chicago.
And what year were you talking about?
I think 1885, I'm guessing. When was the Chicago Fire? Because that's part of the story. Oh. I'm not positive.
I'm not up on my history, sorry.
Yeah, I would have to glance. But anyway, he had a wife and four children. He had done well and invested in a lot of real estate in Chicago. His young son contracted some disease that took him quickly, and then not long after that, the Chicago Fire took out a large number of his holdings, and he and the wife and his three daughters were going to Europe for a vacation to kind of regroup. And he had to stay behind for some business. So the wife and the three girls got on a ship, which collided with another ship out in the Atlantic and went down in 12 minutes. And the mother survived. They found her holding on to a piece of wood, but the three girls drowned. And she got to London. And she just telegraphed. The telegraph still exists. It says, basically, what do I do now? You know, and he got on a ship, and as quickly as you could back in those days, he got to her. But on the way over, when the captain got to the spot where that ship had sunk, he thought the guy would want to know. So he called Mr. Spafford to the deck and said, "This is where your daughters lie." And he went down to his cabin and wrote that song, that lyric. Yeah. That's just the perfect example. And the number of people who have been affected and saved and comforted from that moment of incredible pain in him, from him giving into it and let it turn into something good, that's just, it doesn't get more godly than that. And that's really what makes me tick to a large degree, that process. But that's the best story I'm aware of. There's a lot of them have incredible stories, but I think that's the best one for me.
Listen, we're going to take a quick break. During the break, I'm going to see if I can pull up a YouTube video of that song, just to get some people the feeling of what it is you do and how well you do it. So we'll be right back. Don't go away.
One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships is about Charlene, a stroke survivor. Back in 1996, Charlene was a healthy, normal, very active 52-year-old woman whose amazing talents resemble that of both a Martha Stewart and a Wonder Woman. But all that changed when she suffered a massive stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on the right side. Who am I? My name is David. I've had the privilege of being Charlene's husband since 1975. We had a wonderful, fairy tale, storybook-like courtship that culminated in our marriage a year later. Charlene had just come out of a marriage where after 10 years, she received two black eyes and a broken nose by her former husband when he came home high on speed. Charlene believed in no second chances of any kind for abuse, so she left. Finding herself all alone in the world with her 5 and 10-year-old daughters, Cynthia Lorraine and Deborah Lynn, she started raising them by herself for the next 2 years. Then fate brought us all together. After falling in love with Charlene, Cindy, and Debbie, our love then produced Rebecca Elizabeth. We had a wonderful, normal life for the next 20 years. But today, things are very different for everyone. One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships is the amazing story of a woman's fight to survive all that life had thrown her way. Everyone who knows Charlene is thoroughly amazed at how she lives day by day, month by month, year by year, and with a smile on her face and hope in her heart that everything is going to be okay. Her faith in God is her foundation in this hope, that everything happens for a reason, and what doesn't kill her will make her stronger. She inspires everyone who meets her. Her accomplishments since her stroke are very impressive, often making us normal people look like whiners and complainers. So pick up your copy of One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today. You won't be disappointed. Just hear what best-selling author Lynn Barrington has to say about it. If you think you have it bad, read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy and Dove Award recipient, the godfather of contemporary gospel Christian music, Andre Crouch? Charlene just won't let the promises of God go, and she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. You'll be encouraged by her testimony, regardless of what you're going through. Available everywhere, but if you purchase your copy directly from the author's website, onearmoneleg100words.com, Charlene and David will personally autograph your copy. Enjoy.
And we're back with Gary Chapman and my host, guest host, Adrian Gruberg. Yeah, I had to do something in advance in order to get the audio on. I could share the screen, but you wouldn't share the audio. So I encourage everyone to go to YouTube and look up Gary Chapman and It Is Well With My Soul, or A Hymn A Week. And you'll be blessed by that. I think caregivers themselves would be blessed by these, regardless of their religious affiliation. I think atheists would be blessed by it. I mean, I went on there because I've never heard them before. And I was just going to listen for a few seconds, you know, just get a feel of what you do. And I had to listen to the whole thing. And I listened to another one, and I listened to another one. And it just mesmerized me. So whatever you're doing, Gary, it's very anointed. And just keep it up. I would highly recommend every character, if you're needing peace or just, you know, a moment to meditate or to calm down or to get over an anxious situation, do that. And that's just what the doctor ordered, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, thank you. A lot of people take them and, you know, they'll take a computer into a hospital room or a hospice. And just, you know, you can go to the channel and it'll just play them all back to back. And a lot of people do that. That's an amazing thought.
That's great outreach. I mean, being able to do that. I didn't even think about bringing the computer. I know when my husband was dying, I turned to music at the very, very end. And I just wanted to do something that would bring him peace. And I was able to with music. It was, he just loved it so much. But it was on a little iPhone.
Yep. They say that music calms the savage beast. You can imagine what it does to a human.
Well, it also helps in pass, I think.
Yeah, and those who are in hospice, who are, you know, getting ready to pass into the next realm.
Mm-hmm.
Just amazing. Great job, Gary. You've really plugged into something there.
Mm-hmm.
What's it like not being a caregiver anymore? Do you kind of miss it? What's it like being an orphan, having no parents anymore? I know that happened to me, and every now and then I got to say, wait a minute, both my parents are gone, because, you know, I wanted to ask my father some advice and he's not there. What's it like?
I did miss it for a while. It's been 8 years now.
Mm-hmm.
But for a while, I really did miss it a lot. But this will sound really strange to probably about half of your listeners. I don't really feel like I lost them.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they're with me to a large degree. I feel as connected to them today as I ever did. Mm. I just know that they're, part of it is a story that my dad, not a story, a fact that my dad told me toward the end of his life. I don't know if we got into this, David, when we talked or not, but the last 2 weeks of my father's life, he was here and he was there. He went back and forth. Call me crazy. I don't care. I really don't. Without question, though, there was zero question that that's what was happening. The first time that it happened, I thought he was dying. I thought that was the moment. But he just kind of, he just buzzed out. He just sort of went away. And you could, you know, slap his face and no response at all. It didn't appear as though he was really breathing. I thought he was dead or dying.
Mm-hmm.
And about 5 minutes later, he came back. And he did that probably 10 times during that 2 week span, the last 2 weeks of his life. And every time he came back, he was laughing. And he had something that he needed to tell someone. And it was things that nobody else was aware of. Like my brother was a pilot his whole life, started out as a crop duster, mm-hmm. totaled a couple of planes the last year of that. He went on to fly. He was a captain of Southwest Airlines for 30 years. But because he had totaled a couple of airplanes, his nickname was Crash for his whole life, still is. He flies helicopters now for the sheriff's department here in Tennessee. But apparently, at some point in his life, he decided that he had a guardian angel, and he gave him a name. Okay, we're as close as brother can get, and he never told me. He never told anybody. That was between him and God and his angel. Mm-hmm. He never said that to anybody. One of the times that my dad made his little round trip, he came back laughing, and he motioned for my brother to come over. And my brother leaned in, and my dad said, "I just met Ralph. He told me you've given him fits your whole life, and you need to slow down a little bit." I'm sorry, it happened. In my case, my mom, you know, who had passed earlier, 8 years earlier, is buried about 3 miles from my house. And, you know, I would go there often. I didn't have any thoughts that she's there. That, you know, it's not like that. It's just a quiet place. Obviously, it generates emotion, and if I was in trouble, if I needed to think, if I needed to pray, I would go there. And my dad came back at one point, and he motioned me over, and I don't know, I had no reason to not go with him, but I had never visited her grave, my father. I had never told him that was a common occurrence for me. He motioned me in, and he said, "Your mom wants you to know that every time you go to her grave, she hears every word you say." And it just, you know, it just, it floored me. It completely floored me. So I don't understand all of that. None of us are going through. Yes. Somebody that claims to do is full of it. But it there's more to life than this life. I totally believe, and we'll all understand it when we all get together again.
Eventually,
but,
yeah.
Wow. Yeah, but anyway, I truly do believe that process was the last thing I needed to get ready for the next chapter for me. You know, literally, I don't plan to, but I feel like I didn't feel before, ready to die. I'm okay with it.
Like it's well with your soul, you mean?
It is completely well with my soul. It is.
So when you think about caregivers, I mean, how this had to have changed you. I mean, when somebody goes out and buys a certain car, you know, all of a sudden they see that car on the freeway all the time. Right. Since you're a caregiver, do you meet a lot of caregivers that you never met before?
I do. And especially since I've been fairly public with it through the process with the hymns. You know, there's, I don't know, 60-something thousand people that around the world that know my story. Because we share it openly and clearly, and it's a real focal point of helping them, you know, launch into their story. It's amazing. The simple truth of it is, you've either been a caregiver, or you're going to be a caregiver.
Yep.
Or you're going to need a caregiver.
Exactly.
Where have I heard that before, Adrian?
I don't know.
Oh, I say that all the time.
You do.
No, it's just the truth. I mean, there's...
it is.
That's right. So we better pay attention.
It's about as big a common denominator as oxygen. So, yeah, they're everywhere.
I mean, if every adult who was a family caregiver went out to vote, and they were all voting for the same person, that person would win. There are more caregivers than there are people who vote. It's unbelievable. I mean, we have power.
Yeah, we have incredible strength. That's true.
Do you think the hymn a week is going to have even a more important impact in the future than it has right now? Is this going in a direction that you foresee it or don't foresee it?
I do, actually. I see, I mean, the community itself is growing, but I've started doing these community-wide hymn sings where you get, you know, 10 or 15 churches, and usually you try to unite around a cause locally, some need, some event that needs to be reached out to, and it can be anything. I did one in Tulsa. There was a white female police officer that shot an unarmed black man and killed him. You know, but unlike Baltimore, Tulsa did not explode. They just were wounded, you know. But it was a great opportunity to bring the community together, black churches, white churches, and law enforcement, first responders. And we did it to just let it be, we call it a night of hymns and healing. And it was unbelievable. There were 1,000 people that showed up to sing hymns
together.
And it was just so beautiful. I would love for that to happen, you know, across the country. Not necessarily with me. Anybody can do it. You know, if you've got a heart for it, just do it.
Where was the venue? Was it in a church, in a stadium?
Or... No, that particular one was the Performing Arts Center in Broken Bow, Oklahoma, south of Tulsa, the edge. You know, it tends to work better in a neutral territory. You know, churches can get, they can start maintaining their boundaries. It's, you know, it's better when they can all go somewhere that they don't all normally go. And so it works better that way. But not to say you couldn't have it in the church. Absolutely. I've done them that way as well. And it's always a good experience, but ideally it's neutral. Yes.
Yeah. You know, I don't know how many hymns there are, but are you eventually going to run out of them?
You know, it's so funny.
One a week, you know.
It's so funny. I grew up in church, and, you know, I was just turning off my camera. May help you. Is my visual okay with you guys still?
Yeah. Sometimes you freeze, but the audio is good.
Okay. You know, I grew up in church, and so I grew up with hymns, and I sang in church. When I was 3 years old, my mother stood me up on a piano bench, and together we sang a song, Inside the Gate, old hymn. And an old man came up to me after church, and he said, "You did a good job, son," and he put a shiny nickel in my hand, and I never looked back. I've honestly never stopped from that moment. So I've got
you still get a nickel, right?
I still will work for a nickel. Yes. No. I did fear when I started doing this that I was going to run out of songs that I knew, but honestly, that's when the fun happened. Now it's almost like a musical archaeological dig. I mean, Fanny Crosby, renowned hymn writer, she wrote 6,000 hymns.
Oh, we
sing about 50 of them. So, you know, that's just one example. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of those songs that will never be heard again. And it's, I honestly just pray and say, okay, God, which one do you want me to dig up? And, I do enough research to find something akin to the original melody. And, you know, the lyrics are usually preserved. A lot of them had like 20 verses, so nobody wants to hear that.
Yeah. You know,
sort through those and find the ones that I think are most, most usable in today's society. And then that's really turned into the fun part, is doing the ones that I don't know.
Don't know.
I've learned so many great songs.
Yeah, it's invigorating, and the voyage of discovery of all this new stuff keeps you going.
You're truly an archaeologist, yes.
Yeah.
I heard a rumor, some little birdie told me that your mother has actually written a lot of hymns. Is that true?
My mother was always a songwriter, always. And she recorded.
Fruit doesn't fall far from the tree, I guess.
Yeah, she vicariously had her level of notoriety through me, but she stayed busy. She was always ready to play and sing. I saw you reference Lynn earlier. Lynn Barrington's a friend of mine as well, and my mother would sit and sing songs with Lynn as long as Lynn was there. Oh my goodness! Yeah. Yeah,
have you sang any of hers yet? Or
not done any of hers yet, and that's a great idea. it's really funny because the policy is that I don't sing anything that has an active copyright, because then you get into all grief, especially on YouTube or whatever, if it has a copyright attached to it.
Don't copyrights only have a certain life?
There you go.
They can be renewed.
Well, yeah, they have to be renewed. Sometimes they get handed down. They can renew it. But after, 75, 100 years or so, you're pretty much in the clear. And for that reason, I never even thought of it. But as it turns out, I kind of think I own those copyrights, or at least my brothers and my brother and sister and I do, so... I don't think we'll sue each other. I should do that.
Well, if that's the only reason you were on the show, it's to start singing your mother's songs, and it was well worth it.
Great idea.
Listen, we're gonna take another break, so don't go away. We will be right back. Just having a great time here with Gary Chapman and Adrian Gruberg, so we'll be right back.
Anytime we suffer loss, we grieve. And a lot of people don't realize what even the grief process is. But it could be 5 to 7 steps, ranging from denial, I don't believe this is happening, anger, oh my gosh, I'm so upset this is happening, to a form of bargaining, how can I get out of this, to depression, which is a very serious thing because that often leads to suicide. And then finally, after you realize you have no more control over your situation and you're totally okay with the new normal that it brings, that wonderful, wonderful place called acceptance.
Being a caregiver takes a special person with passion and compassion. But even you can become a little burned out from time to time. The Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show was developed to help you overcome obstacles, adversity, and burnout, as well as just having a place to rest, relax, and recharge your batteries. We've all been there, and you're not alone. Now, you can take the Caregiver's Caregiver with you. Get the top 25 radio shows in convenient form that plugs right into your USB car stereo or computer. Learn the techniques, tips, and encouragement we all need to better handle the day-to-day challenges. For around $1 per show, just $29.77, get the credit card-sized USB card to have with you anytime you need a caregiver's pick-me-up. Just go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com and order yours today. Go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com now. Consider it an investment in you, and ultimately, an investment in them.
Well, we're back with Gary Chapman and Adrian Gruberg. And Gary, are you having fun?
Yes, absolutely.
Good. It's very important that the guests have fun on my show. So how did caregiving change you personally? I mean, do you go outside just thinking different thoughts, seeing different things, looking for people to care for? What's going on? How has it changed you?
You know, it does make you more aware of the needs around you, without question. The most dramatic thing for me, because it was initially subtle until I realized how deep it was. There's an interesting thing that happens, you know, when you get old, you kind of stop caring. One second. I'm sorry. Oh, that's right. My wife reminds me. We took care of her grandmother as well. For a while, I was living in four generations of estrogen. It was my four-year-old. It was my daughter and my wife, and then her mom moved in with us, and her mom, who just died about a year ago. She lived with us in the house until the last, I think, 5 or 6 months of her life. Mm-hmm. That she got to a point to where she really needed to be in an assisted living place. But where was I otherwise? Oh, yeah. There's an interesting thing that happens when you get old. You really stop, in a good way, you just stop caring. You know what anybody thinks about anything. You just don't care anymore. and the freedom that comes with that and the joy that comes with that freedom is amazing. Well, you know, I've always thought that I was living my life that way, but I wasn't. I was still very much aware of whether or not I looked right, or I was cool enough, or do you like me, do you don't like me, much more than I was aware. And I mean, my father was beyond that long before he died, but certainly the last couple of years of his life, it was on stun. He was always so sweet about it, but he just didn't give a rip what anybody thought of him. He just didn't. And
I don't think watching, Jesus did either.
No, he did not. Jesus did not care. Love me, hate me, take me, leave me. I'm who I am. And you know, that was the big move. That was a giant move for me to get to that place of freedom. And it changed everything. Oh. It changes every moment. It makes it easier to have faith. It makes it easier to reach out to people. It makes you much more responsive to the needs that you slam into. Yeah, that's the big one for me.
Now, Gary, they say behind every great man is a great woman, and I heard you talking to Carrie over there. Is she willing to come into the camera, or she wasn't prepared to look like the queen that she is?
Maybe I don't think she's prepared hello. At this moment. She's getting prepared. She's going out with some girlfriends to a show tonight.
And that would make her prepared. Is she almost there yet?
She'll be very prepared. When she's prepared, it's really prepared. She says, how many minutes do I have?
So tell me about your wife. How has she changed your life?
Oh, my goodness. She's amazing. She's a West Virginia farm girl. Tough as nails and as sweet as she can be. She's just exactly who I needed. She's an amazing person. Yeah.
You had a daughter together.
We adopted a little girl. It's an interesting story.
Tell me about that.
When we got married, we weren't planning to have any kids. I had three. She wasn't thinking that she wanted any. And it was 3 or 4 years after we were married. She just kind of one day said, you know, I think it's not so much that I didn't want to have kids. I had just never been with somebody I wanted to have them with.
Wow.
Well, once that's
out there. How long did it take her to know you to say that?
Let's see. That was probably 5 years. Something like that. 5 or 6 years. But anyway, not to be oversharing, but again, I don't care. once that bridge is crossed, there's no answer except okay, because I'm not going to be the guy that said no, because my kids are the best thing I ever did. So sure. I'm not gonna say no to that. So after 20 years. I put the boys back in the pool, so to speak, which is much harder than telling them to get out. Apparently, the doctor did my vasectomy with a butter knife. So it was a 6.5-hour surgery. And I came out with plenty of swimmers, but they were all going in a circle. So we were going to have to go down the in vitro path. And we were 2 weeks away from going at that in earnest. And we're sitting watching television one night, and Cassie's phone rings. And my recollection, because I just heard, you know, half of the conversation, but it was really brief. It was a commercial break, basically. and it was probably about twice as long as this, but it was basically, hello? Really? Wow. Okay. Well, that's interesting. Well, yeah, I mean, I guess. Okay. All right. Okay. So she hung up the phone. And then she turns to me and she says, how do you feel about adoption? And, you know, I didn't connect the phone call to the question. I didn't at all. And I said, well, and I did what I'm prone to do. When given a soapbox, I will jump on it almost every time. And I said, you know what? I think it's one of the coolest things ever. It is the picture of our relationship with God. That's how it works. And I think particularly if you're pro-life and you're more likely to go, yell at somebody in an abortion clinic than you are to adopt a child if you're able, I think you're a hypocrite. And she was like, great, we're meeting the birth mother on Friday. And I was like, what? And we met with her that Friday, and it was relatively seamless.
Hi.
There you go.
Wow. You're beautiful.
She's ready.
Inside and out, I understand.
Yes.
She cleans up very well, doesn't she?
Oh, here we go.
Where are you going with the girls?
We're actually seeing a play tonight. It's called The Battle of Franklin, A House Divided. I'm
wow.
at a school of three. So this is going to be awesome.
Yeah, we live literally about 2 miles from one of the bloodiest battles of the Civil War.
Ooh.
Right over
there. Really?
And,
there was a Battle of Franklin, huh?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I looked at it. Thousands and thousands and thousands of people died. It was very, very intense.
But the family lived in the basement while the battle was going on. So it's just
I love Franklin. Thing. I had real estate there. I didn't know it was a battle that went on there.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm jealous. Can I go?
Yeah, me too. I'm the caregiver tonight with the 4-year-old. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So is she a good 4-year-old?
Yes and no. Yes, mostly. She is she is a unique 4-year-old.
Okay. A sign of leadership.
She has an amazing brain. They tell us it works at roughly 100 times the normal speed.
Wow.
Really?
Which
does that make her
really
a genius?
Awesome. It's really awesome, and it's really hard because she's smarter than we are.
Well, then you are caregivers.
We are. Uh-huh. Absolutely. That coupled with the fact that she's almost Cassie's size at 4. They tell us she's going to be 6 feet tall. And
really?
Yep. And Cassie is just 5 feet tall.
Thank you.
So they're very quickly becoming the same size. Yeah.
My mother was 5 foot, so don't feel bad.
There you go.
And this kid has like chip strength, and she's afraid of nothing. So if she can get her fingers over the edge of it, she can get over it. And
wow.
Yeah, it's 24/7.
What country was she adopted from?
This one. She was a local girl. Yeah.
It's an open adoption. Yeah, we're huge advocates for private, like independent adoptions, and also I'm all for open adoptions. I think it's just a beautiful process if both parties can do it. You know, everybody's got their process.
That's pretty rare, though, isn't it? I heard it's really hard.
Yeah. And you know what?
In the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
Now, why did they call you? Did they know you were considering adoption? Did you, say, well, maybe I would, you know?
They knew that we were doing the IVF path. And then it was just a really good friend of ours, and she knew what we were about to do, and she got this information and called me, and I think he told you a little bit about it.
Yep.
Thank God for friends, huh?
Yeah.
Yep. Next thing you know, awesome. Dead the millionaire.
You two look so happy and so well together. Very compatible.
We have fun.
Even with the age difference, I'm the older one.
She actually is.
Really?
That's part. Yeah.
You look like the older one, Gary.
She's an old soul, and I'm an idiot. So. Mentally,
and how did you two meet? What was it that attracted you to each other?
So, I'm gonna stop you there because I'm gonna go get ready, and you.
Okay. Yeah, have fun.
Thank you for showing yourself.
Nice
we appreciate
meeting
it.
You.
Have fun.
We met on a little island in the Bahamas called Staniel Key. She was there for as a model for a photo shoot, mm-hmm. and my production company was capturing the making of that calendar, basically what it was. Mm. And I had, you know, they were carting in beautiful women about every 2 or 3 days. There'd be a new crop. And I had made myself a promise, you know, let's not complicate this. You're here to work. And I lived it out. Absolutely. Until I saw her, and we just, it was pretty much love at first sight.
Really?
There was no romance. We just clicked. We just started talking and laughing, and we didn't stop. Yeah. We just had a lot of fun. She's really smart, very opinionated. she says, "What, really?"
Challenging.
Is she still eavesdropping?
Yeah, of course she is. He's around the corner
to correct you in case you're wrong in the story. Every time I tell my story, my wife says, no, it didn't happen that way.
Yeah. Well, when you finish this interview, you need to go to iTunes and listen to a song that I wrote for her to commemorate our relationship for Valentine's Day. It's called Man in Training. Check it out. You will laugh significantly. Yes.
I will do that. Well, Gary, I think we're running out of time, aren't we, Adrian?
Sorta.
We're gonna have to edit some stuff out of here. But how can someone get a hold of you, Gary, if they want to just follow your? Do you do concerts anymore? Concert tours?
Yes. Yeah. I still go out and play. Certainly the hymn sings.
You do that live.
It feels like, oh yeah, it feels like that's beginning to gain some steam. But I actually just met with my agent a couple of days ago and said, you know, I want to hit it. I want to hit it hard. I just feel like it's time. That's a real cyclical thing for me. I've kind of got a little bit of a love-hate relationship with the road after all these years. but every now and then it's
You've been doing it since you were a kid.
Just a child, yeah. I left home. I graduated on a Friday night school and left home on Monday morning and been traveling since pretty much. But yeah, they can contact me through the Hymn a Week page or Gary Chapman, singer-songwriter on Facebook. And it's actually me. Nobody does it for me. Cassie helps out with the Hymn page. But I'm pretty reachable.
Cool. And you're approachable as well.
Yeah. Well, there's that.
Adrian, how do we get a hold of you?
It's through my website. It's Adrian, A-D-R-I-E-N-N-E, at thecaregiverspace.org. Caregiverspace.org is also the website, and the Caregiver Space is on Facebook.
Great, and I'm at caregiver.com, and we're having a book signing on November 11th at Barnes & Noble at our local Santa Clarita, and we're getting booked on television stations across the country starting now. I have
That's
my
great.
First five bookings in, and so pray that we're on as many stations as the Lord will put us on. Thank you again, Gary, so much. It was a great interview, and you're a great person, and it was wonderful meeting your wife, and I'm so grateful that you agreed to come on. Have a wonderful
really
day.
Enjoyed it.
Yes.
Great to meet you, Adrian. I got to grab.
Make
sure
you like us on our pages, Gary. You can follow us as well.
I will do it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific Time and anytime afterwards on podcast to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process right here on the Worldwide Block Talk Radio Network. Goodbye.